we had two 2.4 AMD processors, 4 gigs of RAM, a terabyte RAID array of hard disk space, flat screens, high-powered graphics cards, a whole galaxy of multicolored LED lights. Also, a quart of cooling liquid, dual-layer DVD burners, and a gigabyte of LAN. Not that we need it at all for the show, but once you get locked into a serious hardware collection, the tendency is to push it as far as you can.
Too true, and welcome to Hacker Voice Radio on the 5th of April 2006. You're listening to me, Bilal, and Dark Nature as our permanent co-host, I guess.
Special guest.
Special guest. So, what do we have for tonight? I guess we've got a few updates of a few things that have happened recently, such as the announcement of the Hack London project. So quick update on that. The Hack London project is basically like an umbrella project. It will comprise London. It will be comprised of various different other offshoot projects, such as the Operation Fishnet, the Hacker Voice eZine, and urban exploration projects like that. What the intention is to have basically sub websites built in for each one of these things, and a grand coalition force for this called Hack London. The idea of it is basically really the kind of the whole aim of this huge Hacker Voice project is to really bring back hacking, or true sense of hacking for the UK. Now, obviously, I know that, the thing is called Hack London, but that's just basically a brand name for the whole thing. Obviously, there's various spin-offs that our good friend Dark Nature here is masterminding the Operation Fishnet. I'm masterminding the Hacker Voice eZine, and a few other offshoot projects from that. The main idea of the eZine is to have a magazine that's a hacker-specific magazine that is produced and made by UK hackers for the UK hacking scene. It will have various topics and relevant information in there, as well as maybe some historic content as well. I have two designers that have volunteered themselves to produce cover and page art for this, and I require submissions and various other materials and anyone that can really chip in would make this thing work. For the Operation Fishnet, that's a different kind of kettle of fish. That's basically to do with the whole kind of fishing side of things and the compromise of personal information and trying to get information out there, how to protect against these things. Really, I think directed at the end user, kind of the person that doesn't know anything. It's a really good step to take in bringing a lighter side of hacking to people, a more positive and productive side of what hackers really are, instead of the whole, negative aspect to it, like they're evil and they're out there to destroy your money, and they're there just to rob your banks of everything. That's not really what we're about. We're not criminals. We're here to do a good thing, and we're here to take what possibly could turn into criminal information into a positive sense, positive light, and that's what we're all about.
Well said.
Yeah. So I don't know if you want to give some more. Give a small presentation on what the Operation Fishnet thing is.
Yeah, well, basically, there is a real problem at the moment with phishing emails, in that the people that are perpetrating these scams are getting more and more sophisticated.
Yeah.
And the techniques that they're using are becoming more and more sophisticated.
Yeah.
And in light of that, more and more people are falling prey to their activities. Really, what I want to do is just to give the people of all levels, really, a little bit of armor, you know, so that they can learn to guard themselves against it and be able to spot what, you know, where possibly the emails that come in that would take their identity and take the money.
Yeah.
Also, how to identify when they have been owned.
Yeah.
And know what to do when they've been owned. And along those lines, I've been sketching out some mind maps, and you know, because I like my mind maps, and I've been getting some notes together. Not quite got the website together yet, but I know that you
should be
with that.
Yeah.
That's right. But we've got the domain and we've got some space,
cool.
So it's all systems are go.
Fantastic. Just a quick update as to Hacker Voice Radio stuff. We will have a dedicated asterisk soon. Now, as you know, these things are immensely complex, and I've been working my nuts off, and so is Ionix, to actually get this thing working. Now, this kind of stuff I've been working behind the scenes. There's a few various infrastructure developments that I've done that won't be made public as yet. One of the things that have been made public is the live studio cam. You can access this by going onto my personal CMS website. That's b3l1al.homelinux.net. You will need ActiveX supported to view this, so preferably an Internet Explorer website, Internet Explorer 5.0 and over, to be able to view the webcam. If you're interested in doing that, do so. The username to view the webcam is view, and the password is cam. Quite simple. So if you're interested in exploring those side of things, you can do, and you can actually see me talking live on the show, what it all kind of boils down to in the background and all that kind of stuff. It might not be terribly interesting to a few people, but to some, maybe it might be fascinating to see me sitting there topless.
That's its best.
Yeah.
The geek cam.
The geek cam, yeah. Because I remember, I think sometime around about the end of season one, I had a webcam where people could view what was going on in the studio. But that never really... That was like 2-3 shows, and then it never really took off. And I just want this thing to just sit there, and if people want to view it, they can do. I don't necessarily monitor if somebody's watching or not. I don't give a fuck. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's a bit of fun and games, really. And I thought, well, if Radio 1 has it, they've got studio cams and stuff like that, then why the hell can't something like Hacker Voice Radio have it? And sometimes on occasions we might have more than just me in the real physical studio. We might have guests like, you know, Sapphire or Raiders or somebody like that. They usually pop on and contribute to what we do on the show.
That's a pretty neat idea, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I try to think what you might be getting up to, but sadly, I'm a bit afraid of running into an Explorer.
Yeah,
but I might at some point risk it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, the reason why you need Internet Explorer is because of an ActiveX. Of the ActiveX thing that needs to install. It's basically just a control mechanism for the web cam interface. It lets you do various things to the webcam, like resize it, and you know, just silly things like that that maybe people might want to do and record and stuff like that, and that just runs on top of it. So if you want to take a look at what's happening on the show, then you can do through that. It's not, you know, it's not like a crucial thing or whatever. And obviously right now people are actually asking me what the username and password is.
Because they don't listen.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got pen and tilt control and zoom and all that, have you?
I haven't given them total control. They can just view and resize and do certain things just to make their viewing pleasure more pleasurable. Obviously, let me know if it's too dark, if it's too bright or whatever, and I can adjust the lights in my room. I've got dimmer switches and stuff like that. You know, it's just basically looking at me talking to a microphone with headphones on. You know, it's not terribly interesting, but as I said, I want to keep this thing a running thing, so that one time, very soon, we'll have Sapphire, we'll have somebody else in the studio, and you can see, you know, us discussing stuff like that. You know, it might just be one of these really lame things that I've come up with, and really stupid ideas. So yeah, we've got good old Mark on the show here as well now.
Good evening, man.
How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
I'm very well.
I'm afraid I can't see your sexy webcam because I'm not... I don't have IE here, and if I did...
You don't subscribe to it.
I don't subscribe to sites that require me to download some...
Weird ActiveX. Well, I've been doing a lot of work in behind it to try and make it so that you don't need an ActiveX control. I've written a script whereby it talks to a folder and pulls off JPEGs every 30 seconds. That's still in the developing stages. I'm trying to write that into the CMS of the belial.homelinux.net website. You know, it's nothing special. It's not like this is the latest hacking website or whatever. It's basically just a basic, very, very basic CMS that runs on my box at home to give quick updates on what's going on with various projects, and I can fuck about with things and make it work. And Twist is just saying, ha ha ha, water bottle. So I've got a LucasAid Sports water bottle in my hand.
Very good.
Yeah.
I'm quite interested in your fishnet project.
Yes.
I'm sure you talked about that slightly during the minute delay between when I had the stream and when I had Skype on.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. Really, it's just going to be a place where people can go and learn how to defend themselves against the rising problem of phishing online, because you know it is becoming a bigger and bigger problem where people are losing their identity and losing their money to more and more sophisticated, basically confidence tricksters, you know.
Yeah.
It's as I say, I have a lot of ideas that I need to flesh out, but really, it's going to be one of those. It will be clear what it is when you see it, rather than me explain it, because it's not a very, it's not the sort of thing that I can explain too well on the radio.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Well, you've probably seen what Netcraft are doing with... they've actually recorded a lot of phishing sites, and they've got a toolbar which goes into Internet Explorer or Firefox, and basically it will tell you if you're on a phishing site, or a known phishing site, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and it allows you to report an unknown phishing site that you found, which will send that data to them. Of course, there's a privacy issue there, because in order to know whether you're on a phishing site, it has to communicate with Netcraft's server to tell them what site you are on.
Yeah.
So they can look it up in their database to figure out whether it's a phishing site or not.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
I think that's basically what it'd be like. It'll be a database of known and submittable phishing sites, as well as a lot of information on the background work that these people do to be able to get you to submit your valuable information. So they'll have a section of where people can submit emails that they have received, have a submission for IP addresses that these phishing sites are running on, and all these kind of things. I mean, it's all down to dark nature to really manage and say, this is what it's going to look like, this is what it's going to do. But I'm just giving out ideas that I think could possibly be valuable to the project.
Well,
I
was thinking, if you had a mailbox which you set up primarily to receive phishing spam, then you could put an application on the end of that that would read the messages that came in and visit the phishing site and somehow filter them for whether they were phishing. Clearly, it's going to get a lot of other spam.
Yeah.
So if you, like, create a mailbox probably on some custom subdomain, like phishingvictims.hackervoice.co.uk, then you just pimp this email address all over the place, on lots of dodgy forums with it, and then all the spammers will pick that email address up gradually.
Yeah.
That's a brilliant idea. I mean, I was thinking of doing something along those lines, not quite to that level. I was going to set up an email address that I was going to pimp out just to receive a whole bunch of phishing emails. But then manually dissect them and post them in the alert section of the website. But the idea of actually having the application backtracking and dissecting them and adding them into the database would be quite the thing.
I mean, you'd need some way of identifying a phishing spam from a non-phishing spam. So you know that this fake mailbox isn't going to get any legitimate email because you've set it up so only to receive spam. If you publish the email address anyway, you're going to have to write, please don't email this email because it's set up only to receive spam.
Well, yeah, that's true. Which may cut down the amount of actual phishing emails that it receives.
Well, if you bear in mind that the phishers use commercial spammers. And these commercial spammers pick the email addresses up by a variety of means, but one of which is by having web spiders that go around and pick email addresses up off the web.
Of course.
And these spiders are not particularly clever in that when they see an email address, they gather it, even if it's not valid or they don't care whether it's got written on it. If you send email to here, you will instantly be blacklisted onto every blacklist in the known universe. Do not send under any circumstances. It doesn't matter. The robot's not clever enough to realise what that says.
Sure.
That's
I mean, also, you can have an email address whereby people can literally submit information that they have received about phishing emails that they have received, if you see what I mean. Like, I receive this email and it's new. Like, if you remember the write-up that I did, the little kind of mini article that I did on the movement of Nigerian-based scams to UK Manchester-based scams, they can do something like that along those lines. And it'll be basically teaching people in some ways to stop ignoring their junk mailbox and say, right, that's quite interesting, I'll forward that on to Operation Fishnet, and they assess that.
We could collect these messages ourselves, provided we could publish them in a way which wouldn't give any credit to the scammers.
Sure.
And wouldn't give the scammers any advantage.
Yeah.
So we'd have to make it so it's very difficult for people to click on the links in those emails.
Yeah.
So we could have something that would process the HTML to remove the links to the scam site, so that people would not physically be able to click on them. And maybe have something that if people really did want to know where they did go, they could find out, but without encouraging them to click on them.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could probably do that by, one way would just be to post a JPEG of the email along with an autopsy of where it came from, and basically the pedigree of the male, which group was responsible, or whether it was.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way to do it has got to be set up some sort of automatic collector, and I can't see immediately how it's going to work. I think it's possibly non-trivial in some respects, but I've written things that do most of the pieces of this piece of kit before.
Hmm.
So it's just a matter of putting that together with something a bit clever that can recognise a phishing email.
Yeah.
Phishing emails should be easy to recognise because they'll be full of names of banks and eBay
That's true. I think automatically sanitising emails so that the links don't go anywhere, it shouldn't be too much of a job. I'm doing quite a lot of playing with Ruby on Rails at the moment. That makes stuff like this not super difficult at all.
Mm.
So it's quite a good idea, actually. I mean, one thing is I'm very open to ideas like this. Pardon me. Certainly, if you want to write any of these ideas up and forward them to me, because I certainly wouldn't want to forget them.
Yeah.
I would very, very much appreciate that.
Well, okay, let's talk about the technical details of that when we're not on the radio.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
So that Belial can actually get on with his whatever he was planning to talk about on the show.
Yeah, definitely, and people are most welcome to submit them on the temporary CMS website, and as soon as I get down to getting the website sorted for this Fishnet project, we can then, you know, move them onto there. But for the time being, you know, submit them into any email address you can think of, or post them in the Hack London project forum that I have created. You know, there's so many different ways that people can get info down into, so that other people can view it and know what's going on with the various projects that we have available. It's as simple as that.
Right, yeah, fantastic, man. I'll do that, and I'm gonna call off now and become a listener again.
Did you want to talk about the visualization thing?
Visualization.
Yeah, you said something about virtualization.
Virtualization. Yeah. Yes. Virtualization is not the same as visualization, is it?
No. I read it wrong.
easy mistake to make.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was last week you were talking about virtualization.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And I don't know how much you've talked about in the interim, because I'll be honest, I've missed quite a lot of episodes lately. And I just wanted to point out very quickly that there were several other virtualizers that you didn't really cover at all.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned, was it Box?
Yeah.
Which is great. Box is all right for some things. The problem I have it with it is that I estimate that it runs at 0.5% of the speed of my machine. Which is not too impressive by any virtualization standards.
Yeah.
But the other virtualization systems that certainly that are completely free, yeah, are QEMU, which, although it's not fast, especially, well, depending on the settings and what system you're running and the phase of the moon and that sort of thing, it's a lot faster than Boxed, and QEMU can run DOS, Linux, Windows, whatever really. I've certainly run Windows under it, and although it's sluggish,
sure,
but it does work, and everything about it works. You can even run the Windows installer inside it and install Windows
right.
on a virtual machine. Then the other one is Usenode Linux, which is a slightly different tack on virtualization because it's only for Linux.
Right.
And it basically runs Linux on top of another Linux machine. That is potentially useful if you want to, like, give out... If you want to run some potentially dodgy service, like, say, a Hack the Flag competition or some shells that you can give to random hackers, you clearly don't want them to be anywhere near your real hardware in case they find an exploit that gets them root.
Yeah.
Well, if you set it up correctly, Usenode Linux can ensure that even someone who gets root won't actually be able to destroy a machine or do other naughty things that you don't want them to do.
Sure.
That is, of course, very, actually quite involved to set that up. And that's really about it, you know? That's all I wanted to add.
Cool.
Excellent stuff. Certainly, I'm quite interested in the virtualization at the moment. When I get time, as a thing for this Operation Fishnet that I'm doing, because part of Operation Fishnet is that I tend to have to sometimes visit these fishing sites in order to analyse what they're doing. Now, if I'm able to do that using a virtual computer, then any keyloggers or whatever that gets installed, as you say, won't be able to fully compromise my real computer.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a feature you can use which is in VMware, which is obviously a commercial virtualization solution, but also exists in QEMU, which is, I forget what it's called, it's like undoable disks, I think is what VMware call it. Or snapshots. Basically, you take a given disk image, you can then put as much malware on as you want. You've got 100 rootkits on there. You have a blue screen if death comes up when you just even try and boot it, yeah? And you can just close it down, it undoes everything, and you're back to where you started. The disadvantage is, of course, of that, is if you want to do an upgrade of some software, you've got to remember not to boot it in that mode.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it will just go back.
Next time round, it won't be there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. That's hugely, hugely useful tools.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very useful. That QEMU sounds like it sounds like something I should check out shortly.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe you can run QEMU on Windows.
Okay.
You should certainly run it on Linux, and it can run inside it, can run, well, just about any system that can run on a PC, including DOS, weird stuff that you might want to run, I don't know, NetWare, whatever.
Right.
I've not tried NetWare, but I'm sure it would work.
Outstanding. Yeah, I'll put that on the list then. Cool. And probably have a look at downloading it over the weekend, see if we can get it going, see what we can do with it.
Yeah, I mean, the latest version that you need with the latest performance patch is basically using this non-free accelerator module. I say non-free because it's free to use, but it's not open source in the sense that there are significant restrictions on its use.
Right, okay.
And redistribution specifically.
Mm.
And you don't have to use it to QEMU, it's completely optional. But if you do, it significantly improves its performance.
Sure. Good stuff.
Very good stuff indeed.
Sure, it's if you haven't used anything like this before, I urge you to go out there and check it out and have a play around with it.
Yeah, the one caveat really of virtualization is that it will use up as much memory as you give it.
Yeah.
So if you run 3 virtual machines in your machine, they will use up as much memory as you give them. So you can easily end up running your machine out of memory.
Yeah, well, you do need a pretty high spec machine to do any of this kind of stuff. You don't want to be doing it on a, you know, a P2. You don't want to be doing it on a P3. You really do need a high-spec workstation to do this kind of stuff. Even maybe a server, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using a P3 machine, actually, but it's one that hasn't really been doing anything else at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not too bad. It's just a matter of if you run... some of these things have got defaults for the amount of memory that they take up. And
yeah.
If that's too much, then you can just end up completely exhausting a machine's memory, which doesn't help anything to work at all.
Sure.
And also it occurs to me, just on a sad note, really, one of the topics on the forum just of late has been about the Macintosh Performer. So somebody got hold of a Macintosh Performer and they were asking about what to do with it and what have you. And you're encouraging people to get experience of as many different operating systems as they can.
Definitely.
Now, not everyone can afford to get a whole bunch of hardware, you know, to test all these OSs, and it may be that you've only got the one computer and you don't want to be sacrificing that, you know, stripping it down, putting a different OS in every couple of weeks just so you can try it out. Well, virtualization would be the way forward
if you want to try out different operating systems and you don't have the money to invest in brand new hardware.
Well, yeah, there's also a safety aspect there. If you want to try out some very highly experimental system, like, I don't know, say Reactos or something, then it's probably more prudent, as Gordon Brown would say, not to put it on your real hardware that's got all your most secret emails and all your most important things that you haven't backed up for a while on.
Well, good stuff. A lot of food for thought for all of us.
Yes, bon appetit.
Oh my god, I'm blowing up. Listen, I'm just going to mute my microphone. My phone's giving it loads. I'll talk amongst yourselves.
Right, I'm going to let Belial continue with his thing now. Right, I'll speak to you later, guys. Have a good one.
Hi, sorry, I just had to pop out there for a second. I guess Mark's gone. Did he say goodbye or... Hello?
Yeah, yes, sorry about that. My my landline was ringing, so just mute my microphone.
Okay. Did Mark die or...?
He said goodbye.
Cool. Yeah. I literally came back when he went bloom and went offline.
Oh, right. No, he actually signed off on that.
Cool,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
we've got a huge amount of backlog of news to sift through, really. Really don't know where to start. Don't have Planet here to tell us what's good and what's not.
Well, let's have a look.
Yeah.
Lucas said that's been busy with the old...
He never fails to satisfy.
He's the news hound, I tell you.
He is the news hound, yeah.
News hound. Yeah. Well, there's one area about Microsoft getting it to the vendors, basically telling them that they're not going to be selling naked computers anymore.
Right.
Microsoft, don't sell PCs without operating systems.
Wow.
Mm.
Interesting.
This is naked PCs. Free software supporters are angry that Microsoft is putting pressure on PC vendors not to sell machines without an operating system installed. Microsoft urged UK PC vendors not to give customers the opportunity to buy a PC without a pre-installed operating system.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder what operating system they're encouraging these PC vendors to
install. It wouldn't be Ubuntu.
Going out on a whim, I'd say not.
Yeah, I think it possibly might be Windows XP.
Could be.
But in general, kind of IT purchasing sort of stuff, it's, by default, a PC comes shipping with XP. However, you have that option of purchasing a PC without an operating system installed. And if Microsoft is somehow trying to push these vendors, which they have quite a lot of vendor control, not to sell PCs without an operating system installed, then all these kind of other antitrust rules can come into play. What right do Microsoft have in actually stating to these vendors that they're not allowed to sell PCs without a pre-installed operating system? They don't really have that much legal right as in what's actually happening right now, but obviously they have a lot of muscle and a lot of weight to pull and push these vendors in different directions.
Yeah, well, I know in the 90s, think it was the 90s, there was a big hue and cry when it came to light that basically if you were a PC vendor and you sold PCs with Windows on it, it was an all or nothing deal.
Yeah.
They would say that you can either be selling computers with our stuff on it, or you don't sell any computers with our stuff on it.
Yeah.
You don't have the option of selling some computers with our stuff on it. You either sell Windows computers or you don't sell any Windows computers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's not fair. You know,
it's not fair at all.
Exactly. You should have the option of purchasing a computer. At the end of the day, all you're purchasing is the hardware.
That's right.
At the end of the day, all you're purchasing is literally just the hardware. The software shouldn't come into play at all. But that's what it was like in the old days, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, I bought my current box. It's as a naked computer, Microsoft like to call it. But on a far more insidious note, it seems that they're employing teams of, I think they call them feet on the street patrol.
Right.
Where these people are going into the shops on the high street and doing spot checks, just to make sure that they aren't mixing up naked and otherwise PCs.
That's really messed up stuff there. You know, if they're actually doing this, then you can obviously see why they're doing this. If you were a corporation like Microsoft, your ideal situation would be to sell as many PCs with Microsoft pre-packaged into it. But I think these people need to stand up to them and stand up and be counted, because at the end of the day they're taking the piss and they're taking the whole open source market out of the picture when they try and push their weight and do very, very dirty evil under the kind of counter things like these that they have been doing so for such a long time. And I'm sure everybody knows that this kind of stuff has been going on for a very long time, where they prepackage stuff and the whole business model is set on the whole Borg side of things. You know, you will be assimilated. But yeah, there's not terrible lot that the simple man can do apart from build his own computer or purchase from a very custom supplier.
Yeah, but even worse than that is that a quote from Microsoft. Now, he says that he can state categorically that these feet on the street patrols will not be paying customer visits.
Hmm.
Now, why they want to say that the feet on the street patrols won't be paying customer visits?
Yeah.
Why would you have to deny that?
Hmm.
You know, I certainly don't think that's. Well, I certainly don't think that it's anyone's business to be coming to my house and saying what software are you running. But by them coming out and saying that they won't be coming to your house to check out what's happening, it sounds like protesting too much, almost. Mm. If you know what I mean.
Sure. Yeah. Definitely. It's definitely infringing on your personal choice.
And certainly, if you buy a PC off the shelf with credit, and Microsoft, you know, in their wisdom, ask for a list of purchasers. They're going to be looking for all those that chose to buy a non pre-installed computer.
Yeah.
And well, Microsoft are saying, well, it's to protect our
corporate profit. Interests. Yeah.
That's right, you know, because these people don't have an operating system on the computer when they bought it. So, what operating systems are they installing? Are they installing open source, or are they going to be installing pirated versions of Windows?
Yeah.
It could be that they pop round and say, you know, let us see your license.
Hmm.
But that's just one step away from. Well, I don't know, the listener's licenses, you know.
Exactly.
Very, but, very bad. The computer, please.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing that kind of caught my attention in the news today is that the push to add folic acid to bread. The public is said to be asked if folic acid should be added to some types of flour to cut the risk of birth defects. A meeting of the Food Standards Agency this week is likely to sanction a 12-week consultation exercise alongside customer research. The aim of the game is to add this acid into bread produce to cut down on certain birth defects. Now, I'm not a medical kind of person, but certainly seems a very interesting thing to do. And also, you know, you've got to say, well, you're working on the paranoid side of things, you're working on the side of things that they're trying to induce this chemicals into bread and also into water and milk and all this stuff that you eat every day. Is this a good thing? Is there enough backing into it? Is there enough... you know, what kind of side of... Yeah, exactly. But, I don't know, some countries have been doing this for years. America has been doing this for even a long time, and they've really had some serious fucking issues where they introduced this growth hormone in cows that then turned very toxic in milk and killed quite a lot of people and endangers quite a lot of other people's lives. You know, will this somehow be... you know, helping the whole spin on birth defects. But at the end of the day, you've got to look at why birth defects are even being caused, and it's due to the environment we live in, it's due to the whole microwave thing, it's due to the chemicals that body takes in during birth and then during the adolescent stages of a fetus. You know, we'll see what actually happens to this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very much inclined to think that people have been eating bread for a long time without folic acid in it, and it's not killed anyone yet.
Yeah.
If it's not broken, then really we don't need to be looking at fixing it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that if I was pregnant and I thought that my folic acid levels were a bit low, then it would be my business to go to the chemist and rectify it for myself.
Exactly.
I don't really want it being snuck into my body.
Yeah, and bread isn't actually the most healthiest thing you could actually eat.
Yeah. No, exactly. But it's not the most unhealthy thing you can eat. And certainly by adding, well, essentially medicine to my bread, I don't think it's making it much more healthy.
Yeah.
On the same note, I don't really like the idea of them putting chlorine in the water. Fluoride.
Well, I think it's a good idea. At the end of the day, it makes, as long as, you know, the water is safe to drink, the last thing they want to do is reduce this. It's something that kills 1,000 people, but at the end of the day, if it helps the person that's drinking the water and it's safe, and also you have an alternative which is chemical free, like bottled water and stuff like that, which is mineral water, you can drink that if you don't like that, and also you have loads of home filters that you can do various things with, but I have to say that these things have to be thought out. Fucking, you have to think these things through before introducing this to a whole fucking nation, you know.
And also, really, you have to give people the choice.
Yeah.
We don't know whether some people would be in some way intolerant to high levels of folic acid.
Yeah.
And certainly, it's like vitamin C, for example. It's a good thing in moderation, but if you have too much of it, it's really a very bad thing indeed.
I mean, I think the reason why I'm slightly against this is that I understand that fluoric acid is a nutritional benefit, and so are quite a lot of other things during the time of birth, during the time of pregnancy. But why the hell would you then package this in a bread form? I believe that what you can do is simply just have this thing as a separate nutritional tablet you can take during the time of pregnancy, and leave bread alone,
Well, certainly, I believe you can go to the chemist and buy folic acid tablets and take those if you feel that you need them, or if your doctor tells you that your folic acid levels are low. I mean, I don't know much about folic acid. I don't really know.
No, neither do I,
No, but no, it doesn't seem like a good idea. I'll say that much. It doesn't seem like a good idea at all.
It doesn't seem terribly evil, but it just seems weird. Why? It's too much work, and it just doesn't seem like the end result is actually going to benefit anyone. But, just quickly to run things up, because we're running out of time, Dixon's, a huge chain of consumer electronics, is ditching the high street. Dixon's Stores Group, DSG, is pulling Dixon's off British high streets. The brand will continue, but only as a website. All Dixon's stores will be rebranded as Currys.digital shops, and this is starting in early May. So, obviously, all these people that have been buying very high-priced margin of consumer goods are now no longer able to do this from the high street, and probably more so to the better, because Dixon's rip people off a lot.
Big style. Oh, yeah. You're not joking. Although people who have been buying some expensive stuff from Dixon's might want to be checking out their 3-year warranties and what have you, because,
they will no longer exist.
That's right. You know, everyone loves buying the, everyone loves selling extended warranties.
Oh, yeah, they make a lot of money in that. No, I mean, they're selling you, like a Microsoft mouse costs you, like, £40. One of these things you could buy from any other reputable online store, or even eBay, for half the price of that. And, you're talking about laptops that are 2 years old that they're selling as brand new on the market, and it's just ridiculous. But, fuck them, they're losing money. That's why they're closing these stores down. There's no other reason why, It's not going to... They're losing a fuckload of money because they don't get enough customers. They have to pay for the staff, they have to pay for the premises, they have to pay for the electricity and all those overheads. And they just cannot last no longer as a company doing this and charging these overpriced goods.
I'm inclined to think that if they actually invested more money in staff, they might be able to stay around for a bit longer. I mean, I don't know about you, but the last time I was in Dixon's...
They don't know shit.
No, they don't know nothing. Yeah. You're getting served by some 14-year-old. Well, can I help you, mister?
I have to say, they're not as bad as PC World,
Oh, PC World, yeah.
Don't get me started on PC World.
Oh, I often like to go in there after work, and because I wear a suit to work, I'm looking at stuff on the shelves, and I have people coming up to me, and they've got a software product in there, and they're saying, "Will this run on my computer?" And I say, I don't work here. Oh, sorry. It got to the point where, because I'd go in there quite frequently, because it was convenient for me, on my way home from work, that I would sometimes get coloured by the staff. because a customer would be asking them, about a graphics card, or asking them about a piece of software, and the 15-year-old lad that's serving them is scratching his head and saying, "Dave, you got any ideas on this?" and I'm like, "Well, I should get a fucking commission for this shit, I've got a day job." I just wanted to mention about these Disney high-tech mobile phones. Sadly, we're running out of time, but it seems that Disney offering mobile phones that allow parents to monitor the text messages and picture messages that their children send. Also allow them to track the children using their high-tech GPS-type system. All good stuff to a certain extent. Certainly, I think if I had kids and they were using mobile phones, I'd be concerned about them receiving and sending text messages, because with the all the Bluetooth and all that high tech goodness that's available, you don't know who are talking to your kids. If you need to use satellite tracking devices to keep an eye on your kids, and looking at the picture on the BBC website, these are very young kids. If you need the assistance of a satellite to track kids of that age, then really, you shouldn't have kids.
Yeah, exactly. You
shouldn't. Quite frequently, I would be driving home from work, and you see kids, and they're only 8, 9 years old on the street playing out, and they're pulling out these mobile phones that are like pretty high speed phones.
Yeah.
And you know, they're taking calls and then running off, and you're thinking, well, when I was that age, I very rarely used the phone in the house, because if I wanted to have a conversation with my buddies, I would just go across the street and knock on the front door.
Yeah.
Because my friends didn't live that far away. Sure. And as an 8 year old, I didn't have that much of a busy lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, that I needed to be constantly available on the mobile phone. It's something's wrong, really. Maybe I'm just old fashioned, but to me it just seems a little bit odd.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I would really love to dive into this, but obviously we've just run out of time.
Absolutely.
So I think we can leave that for tomorrow's show, and I think we need to dig into this and dive into the story and just have a big old hacker voice discussion about the craziness of it.
Cool.
But anyway, thanks for listening to another show. If you have any comments or suggestions about the radio show, send an email to radio@hackervoice.co.uk. Same time tomorrow. Hopefully we'll see what planet's up to. And as I promised, my talk on cryptography will be scheduled for tomorrow. Hopefully see you same hack channel, same hack time.
Nighty-nighty, all.
Bye-bye.
Play nice.